It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it's monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
Exterminate!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown. T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 2.4.
Bringing you oral pleasure, just like the guy with the golden voice.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Jen.
And this week, we have actually a whole bunch of really good news.
Yay, good news!
Yay, because we've been doing lots of, like, bad stuff. So it's time for some good stuff. But first, why don't we talk about movies that are coming out this month that are genre-oriented. So
yeah.
Take it away, Jen.
On February 11th, we have the new animated feature, Romeo and Juliet. And yes, that is Romeo and Juliet enacted by gnomes. Garden gnomes, to be specific.
Yes.
I have rated this a 4 on the 1 through 5, whether or not I want to see it scale.
Yes.
We should explain that real quick.
Yeah, well, we have a new scale we're going to do real quick. Okay, so 1 through 5, 1 being the worst, 5 being the best. It goes like this. 1 is, I'd rather kill myself. Mm-hmm. 2, it's probably torture cinema, which is appropriate. Mm-hmm. 3 is, maybe. And 4, of course, is I'll probably see it. And 5 is really for the Harry Potter fans, which is I'll be there opening night and I'll dress up. So we're totally going like afternoon, morning, talk show, yeah, comedy, yeah. Ridiculous. Like we should be like the Badger and the Whoopi, you know.
Exactly. So I'm giving Romeo and Juliet I will probably see it. It looks cute.
And of course you've got kids, so that makes sense. And I'm giving it a 4 also because some of the jokes were really good.
They were. It is on the adorable meter.
Yeah. Some of them are very adult.
Yes, that's very true.
Which I like.
But the Ninja Gnome. It was all about the Ninja Gnome for me that clinched it. So
yeah.
I'm going with that. All right, the next movie. There are 3 films coming out on February 18th. First up, we have Vanishing on 7th Street, which we are pretty sure was stolen from a short story by Jason Sanford.
Yes.
But regardless, I'm giving it an maybe.
I think I may actually go see this.
Really?
Yeah, I'm giving it a 4. Even though I know I shouldn't, there's something, like, I think Hayden Christensen is, like, inside my soul.
I know.
Like, I can't not watch his movies for some reason.
I know, but that's why I'm giving it an if, maybe, because I'm not going to, like, actively seek it out to watch, but...
It'll be like, I've got a free movie ticket, and I need to use it by tomorrow. Well, okay.
In my defense, I don't go to the movie theater for 90% of what I watch. So, when I say, like, even on a 4... I'm going to see this movie. It means I'll probably rent it.
Okay, well.
All right, yeah. Next we have The Witches of Oz, which may or may not be a made-for-TV movie.
Yeah, we're not sure. In the trailer, it says or at least the trailer I watched, said it was for TV, but IMDb and everywhere else says it's getting a limited movie release, so I don't know.
Yeah, but so who knows? But it's got 2 of the Hobbits in it. So.
Yes, Billy Boyd and Sean Astin. Of course, you know who they were. Yeah,
of course you do. And I am giving this it might be torture cinema.
Yeah, I've given it a 2. It's probably torture cinema. It looks pretty campy and bad. All right, last one.
It would be worth watching if it becomes on the Sci-Fi Channel.
As torture cinema, sure.
As torture cinema, exactly. Everything on the Sci-Fi Channel is possible torture cinema.
True.
All right, last film is actually fairly highly anticipated if you are a teenager. It is I Am Number 4, based on the book by Pittacus Lore, which is actually 2 people, but whatever. And
it's just based on Frey, whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
It's his life story.
The other guy, too. He's an alien. I didn't know that. Anyway, this is like a really popular teen fiction, so hopefully it does well, because I'd like to see more teen science fiction, personally. Anyway, I'm giving it a maybe.
I'm giving it a 2. It's probably torture cinema.
Really?
I think it's so hyped that it's actually going to turn out to be one of those films where they hyped it too much, and then you watch it and you realize this movie is just actually kind of stupid.
Well, it could be, it could go the Twilight direction, but I haven't read the book, so I don't know. Twilight was bad to begin with, and then they made the movie, and it was just as bad.
yeah.
So, but I haven't read the book, so I can't really say if the book is bad. But if the book is bad, then it's totally a two.
Well, Jason Sanford said it was good, but not great.
Right, and I trust him. I do, so I'm going to go with maybe.
All right, well, two. All right, so
those are the movies coming out this month. Yay!
So go see the ones you're interested in. We'll have links up for all of that so you can go look and you can see the trailers and all that good stuff. So you can make a decision on your own. But anyway, so big news. So we got to cram a lot of this in real quick. So the big news is Batman. The new Batman movie, The Dark Knight Rises. We now have mostly all confirmed actors, actresses in the film and characters. Only one of them is not 100% confirmed, but the big two that we know are absolutes are Anne Hathaway and Tom Hardy. We knew Tom Hardy was going to be in it, but we just didn't know what he was going to be. Now we know what he's going to be.
He is going to be playing Bane.
And let's be fair, people were thinking that a long time ago. So
yeah.
I'm actually stoked for that. He puts on the muscle. I think he could pull off Bane. And then Anne Hathaway will play Selina Kyle, which Batman nuts will remember as Catwoman.
Yay, Catwoman!
Which I really hope she pulls it off.
I think she has the acting chops for it in his franchise, personally. But we'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean,
she can be a little bit cheesy sometimes, so who knows?
Yeah, she can't. But yeah, and his series has been incredibly
not cheesy.
Not cheesy, very dark.
Right. But I think Christopher Nolan has the ability to direct her in such a fashion that she will be able to pull off a Selina Kyle brilliantly.
I think she could do it. I trust Nolan. I think based on the stuff I've seen lately of Nolan, the only thing exception is Christian Bale, excuse me, who is not the best Batman.
Shut up. Seriously, I will kill you if you diss my Christian Bale.
Only his Batman.
No, his Batman is genius.
Except for the...
Excuse my language. Genius. Yeah, but it makes sense within the context because he's talking to people that might know him. So he has to use like a gravelly Batman-y voice.
All right.
And he sounds awesome. So whatever. Anyway.
Shut up.
The other person, did you mention? Okay, so Joseph Gordon-Levitt is also going to be in the film.
Oh, there you has even, been like get that all anticipation up. You just
Whatever. You don't need anticipation. We're trying to, you know, get through this stuff. So there's no buildup.
Just whatever.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So this makes this officially an Inception, like, you know, reunion party. And there has been like fanboy talk that he's going to play
Riddler.
The Joker, which I think is lame.
Oh, well.
Joker. There's Joker fanboy talk, too. But he is playing a villain, probably. And yes, I think Riddler would be a more likely.
Yeah, I just don't want to see the Riddler.
I like the Riddler.
I just don't
want to
see it.
I want to see a Christopher Nolan version of the Riddler. I think it could be really, truly epic. I think it could, on the scale of his Joker.
Okay, well, if he could, yeah, I mean, maybe he can do it and he can make it. I'm so burnt out on the Riddler.
Campy. Oh, yeah, well, get over it.
Yeah.
All right, next.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, moving on. Next big news is actually a bit of science news. We're all worrying about, oh, what are you going to do about our oil? Well, apparently a U.S. biotech company has come up with a great way to do it. They have created they received a patent for a proprietary organism, which is some kind of cyanobacterium, whatever the hell that is, that produces liquid carbons by consuming
liquid hydrocarbons, specifically.
Yeah.
Diesel fuel, jet fuel, gasoline, biofuels. This is the stuff that runs our world.
Right, and it does it by consuming carbon.
Carbon dioxide
specifically, which of course we know from global warming, burning up everything, it's bad.
Bad. And so it consumes 90% of what it would end up producing.
Yeah. And this is impressive. This is really impressive.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what we're going to do with it because I don't know what you just like let it up into the atmosphere and it goes, ah, and it just sucks everything up. But I imagine maybe they would just...
It says nom nom.
Would the new cars just come with like a carbon sucker upper? It would just suck it up into a canister and you just...
That would be kind of awesome.
Turn it in at the gas station for like a discount on your gas or something?
Who knows?
Because, I mean, you'd have to get the carbon dioxide out and it'd be very problematic to just let this out into the atmosphere.
maybe you could have like your own little cyanobacterium factory in your car. So like,
well, you wouldn't, because they have a patent.
Put the gas. Well, I know, but like they could sell like cyanobacterium batteries essentially, and it would like it would be a loop. So it would it would produce the fuel that would go into your gas tank, and then the gas tank, you know, would release the carbon dioxide, which would get sucked up by the cyanobacterium and turned into fuel, and so on and so forth. It'd be like a little. That's never going to happen. But anyway, it's still kind of spiffy, and I was concerned when I read the first paragraph.
Yeah.
So when we link to this article, read the whole thing, because it's terrifying when you go, oh crap, what the hell are they thinking? Making something so it can be reliant on fossil fuels for the rest of human existence, which won't be very long if we keep using fossil fuels.
Yeah.
And then you get to the rest of it, and it turns okay. So.
Although, to be honest, I still would prefer to have cars that renew their energy without requiring me to go to the gas station. But
yes, that would be nice.
But we probably won't get that. Yeah.
Yes.
But so it's right. Very interesting news. And who knows where it'll go. And there's a lot of interesting science stuff too. There was we discovered like 68 new Earth-sized planets in the habitable zone, which is fun. So, but
it's fun.
Yeah. But anyway, so moving on, the next one, which Jen is uber excited about, is actually.
I am. And you should be excited about this too. I think it's right up your alley in terms of post-colonial science fiction.
I don't like Cuba.
Whatever. anyway, so apparently Cuba has, well, not Cuba as a whole, but a director from Cuba has made its first zombie movie. It is called Juan of the Dead.
Yeah.
And the premise is the part that I am very excited about. It isn't a rip of Shaun of the Dead. Although
the title
the title is. It is a comedy, but it's a socio-political comedy with zombies. So the premise is that an entire city is overrun by zombies while Cuba's communist leaders just go, it's just a plot by U.S.-backed dissidents, and they're trying to bring down the government. They literally don't do anything because they're like, it's the Americans. So that leaves this one guy named Juan who decides he thinks it's a great way to make some money. So he has like a commercial or something, and he says, I'll kill your zombies for you. Just pay me. I think it's hilarious. I love the idea that the communist leaders just kind of go, eh. And I love that there's a guy going, I can make money off of this. So, yes, I'm excited.
It's very American. Capitalist opportunism right there. I'm surprised they're allowed to make the film because it had to be approved.
The Cuban government has been
better.
They've been a lot better. They have been.
I wouldn't say a lot, but somewhat better.
I'm going with a lot after so many years of complete totalitarian, practically control. They've gotten a lot better. So
yeah.
I'm a fan of Cuba, though. So
yeah, and it looks pretty campy, but in a good way.
Yes.
Like Shaun of the Dead campy, but different.
Yeah, there's. I think one of the link that will be on the webpage has this hilarious introduction when they're talking about the film, the pile of heads.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's the first line. It's from the BBC. It's great. It's great.
Love it.
All right. To close out the news section. Wait, what?
Don't we have more movie news?
Yeah. We're closing it out with this last bits.
This is actually very much literary related movie news.
Yes, it is. It's just quick though.
Mm-hmm. Just go ahead.
So before we go into, we have an interview with Marianne Mohanraj with the Speculative Literature Foundation comes up right after this. But before we go to that, just real quick, three important things. One, Battlestar Galactica Online will be available on Sci-Fi on the 8th of this month.
Such a dork.
It is going to be awesome. I want to play it so bad. I can't wait.
Why is it you get to throw things in at the last minute and I don't?
Because you suck.
Yeah, whatever. Okay, next.
Yeah, next is actually, there is a Total Recall remake that is in the works. Total Recall, obviously based off Philip K. Dick's work. We don't know much about it, but Colin Farrell is set to be in it and Douglas Quaid. Or he's supposed to play Douglas Quaid, excuse me. In Total Recall, it's made by Sony Pictures. Not supposed to go near the Verhoeven's 1990 original, so we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll be good.
They are saying it's going to be a closer adaptation of the original short story. So.
Okay. Well, we'll see how that works. Mm-hmm. And then probably the biggest news, and oh, the little ducks are just now walking right in front of my window. Look at the little ducklings. Anyway, going back. I'm sorry. It's so cute. It's so
cute. That was our cute moment for this episode.
Anyway, so last thing, J. Michael Straczynski, you know him as Babylon 5 and all of that good stuff, he has announced officially, apparently people have been like figuring out that he's doing this, that he is adapting and turning into a movie. Harlan Ellison's Repent, Harlequin, said the TikTok Man, one of the most probably famous science fiction stories in the history of the genre. And of course, we will have the opportunity to be humiliated by Harlan Ellison in about a week and week. No, about a week after this goes up.
Yeah.
He's going to be at Eton. So.
Yes.
Yeah, it'll be really good. So anywho, so.
Those, yeah. What? We're only a week away from Eton.
I know. It's going to be awesome. We'll have a very special Eton episode, too. Mm. Yeah. So.
So spiffy.
Yeah. So that's basically all of the major news that I think needed to be mentioned.
I think so.
So
shall we go on to our interview?
Yes, I think so. So we'll be right back with our interview with Marianne Mohanraj of the Speculative Literature Foundation. We are here with Marianne Mohanraj, who is the director of the Speculative Literature Foundation. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So first things up, tell us a bit about, you know, what is the Speculative Literature Foundation and why did you create it?
Okay. So I started it kind of coming off of Strange Horizons. I had founded Strange Horizons back in 2000 and run it for a couple of years, and it had sort of gotten to a stable point, and I was ready to hand it off to Susan Grappi, who took over the magazine. And at that point, I had been in grad school for a while. I was a fiction writer. I had gotten some grants as a fiction writer on the sort of literary fiction mainstream side, and I had a lot of friends, and I read a lot of people in science fiction and fantasy who, you know, didn't apply for mainstream grants, weren't really aware of them, or if they knew they were out there, they didn't think that they would, you know, that they'd have a shot at them. And I think a lot of it actually comes back to Nala Hopkinson, because she and I were talking at various, probably WISCON conventions, about this issue, and she had served on the Canadian Arts Council, so it's been a lot of time working with arts grants, and was sort of similarly frustrated about the fact that genre writers tended not to apply. So one way she was sort of trying to help with that issue was to, she'd put together a mailing list that she was doing at the time where she would sort of regularly send out notices about various grant opportunities. And I thought what would be helpful is if we in the genre had sort of our own arts organization that would sort of serve two purposes. One would give grants really dedicated to the genre, but which would also maybe serve as a gateway. You know, we can sort of show you how to apply for a grant in this sort of friendly environment, and maybe that would encourage writers to then go and apply for maybe their state grants or federal grants or other programs that are out there. So that was, you know, sort of the genesis of the Speculative Literature Foundation, to be an organization like the NEA, but specifically focused on science fiction and fantasy. Sorry, long answer. I tend to go on.
It was a perfect answer. That was exactly what we were curious about. why do you think that speculative literature is as important as, you know, the foundation definitely makes it out to be?
You know, it's funny. It seems like sort of an odd question to me. I mean, I guess I don't do it because I think it's important per se. I read it because I love it. You know, and I was an English major at the University of Chicago, very sort of straight lit, geeky kind of stuff. And then I did an MFA and a PhD in lit and creative writing, which also were programs that were pretty, you know, mainstream focused. But all the way through, I read and loved science fiction and fantasy. And, you know, I had some teachers that were more open to it and some that were less. There definitely are still sort of prejudices against it in the mainstream field. But, you know, I've always You know, there's sort of an argument you can make that realism is a very recent thing in fiction, right? That if you look at most of human history and storytelling, most of what's dominated has been speculative. Fairy tales, folk tales, ghost stories. That's what we've been telling, you know, as long as we were sitting around campfires. So then you have this sort of rise of realistic fiction in the 19th, early 20th century, and I'm going to try and avoid getting all academic about it, but, you know, it does feel kind of like a blip to me, you know, and I think you're seeing the reaction to that. You're seeing writers like Chabon pushing back and saying, you know, you can't just make me stick inside this realist box. There's a much bigger world out there to work with, to play with, and I'm going to write all of it. So even though I myself have written quite a bit of realistic fiction, maybe even mostly realist fiction, I've always loved everything that pushed at those boundaries. And I just think that's, you know, I just think that's most of literature, I suppose.
Well, that makes sense.
It is, though. And more I think about it, everything that I was forced to read when I was in high school and early college as literature, I mean, even Shakespeare, most of that stuff has... You know, there's witches or...
Yeah, there's witches, there's fairies, there's Frankenstein, there's... I mean, you know, the Bible has all sorts of fantastical things happening. You know, whether you call them, you know, magic or miracles or myth, you know, it's not purely realistic.
For sure.
So I guess one big question then, since you're the director of this, the foundation, what are some things that you are now sort of been doing to promote speculative fiction and I guess speculative poetry too, since that is a part of it, within the sort of larger literary community?
Well, so I'll talk about a couple of things that we tried, which have been sort of more or less successful. I think when we first started, we definitely wanted to try and encourage cross-pollination, and we created the Fountain Award, which was $1,000 prize for the best speculative short story. And we actively sort of approached literary magazines. We contacted them and we told them about the award and we asked them to send in things and that they had already published. So this was, you know, it wasn't an award that you could, you know, apply for as a writer. You had to be nominated to it by editors and the work had to already be published, basically. So in some ways that was really successful. I think if you look at the first couple of years of the Fountain Award, you can see that we have sort of the winning lists and the nominees, and it's a really great mix of traditional genre magazines and mainstream lit magazines. And I think, you know, I don't know to what extent people actually looked at this, but for me looking at it, I'm like, well, there are clearly a lot of mainstream lit magazines that are open to publishing speculative material because they're doing it. So I hope that, you know, genre writers could look at this list and say, oh, well, maybe I could submit something to one of those magazines because I know they're open to this kind of material. So that was definitely one thing that we tried. One thing that I found difficult about doing it that way is that it becomes hard to publicize because it's not a sort of free-for-all voting kind of award in the way we set it up. So, you know, it all happened kind of quietly behind the scenes. We send letters to the editors, they send us stuff. We have a jury that discusses it and then votes on it. And then we give the award, and some lucky author gets $1,000 kind of descending out of nowhere. As opposed to something like the Hugo Award, where there's this massive run-up and there's lots of voting and lots of discussion and people sort of arguing for their favorites.
And people campaigning for themselves.
And people campaigning for themselves, which I have mixed feelings about. But you know, that's very visible. I mean, the advantage to that as a process is that it's very visible, and it sort of encourages a larger conversation. So we did the award, I want to say, for 3 years, and it was a fair bit of work. Karen Meisner was the person who was administering the award. At the same time, she was one of the fiction editors at Strange Horizons, which I believe she's still doing. And after 3 years, we were sort of like, well, this is a ton of work, and we're not sure it's the most effective route. So it's on hiatus right now, and we're kind of thinking about whether we should come back to it. In general, the SLF is sort of in this transition period. We'd sort of tried a couple of things initially, some of which I think are going well and others maybe not so much. And what we'd like to do is bring in some new people and sort of have a wider conversation about what we can do to serve the community. You know, what would be, you know, what do the writers and the readers and the artists in the field, what would they find helpful, rather than, you know, me coming and saying, well, maybe this would be cool, or maybe this would be cool, I'll try that. I'd rather it were community driven at this point.
Okay. And so I guess in relation to that, what do you then find useful as a writer and a reader about your foundation?
Well, I love the two grants that we give. And actually, we just added support for a third one. We've been doing for quite a while. The travel grant is the Gulliver Travel Grant is an $800 award that any writer can apply to, and they can spend the money if they get the award to travel somewhere and do research on a piece. And we've given out several. It's something I wish I had had access to when I was writing my last book, because the book is set in Sri Lanka and I was in grad school and I would have loved to go and I couldn't afford to, and I couldn't find any grants to help me go there. So I'm hoping, you know, obviously if you're writing science fiction, fantasy, you know, our grant is not going to get you to Mars, or a fantasy world, but like we've given, I know one award we gave to someone who was working with Native American material and they went and stayed there and talked to tribal people and did research there. So there's, you know, often our writing is earth-based in some way or form. So I hope it's been pretty helpful. So I'm excited about that. We give the Older Writers Grant, which is an award to writers over 50 who are publishing professionally for the first time, who have just started out. And I think that's great. There's a lot of stuff that's there to encourage young writers, and I feel like the older writers sometimes get neglected. So that's been going for a while. And we just started helping to fund Cheryl Morgan's doing this translation award, and we're chipping in some money and publicity towards that, because I think it would be great to bring in some of the stuff that's being published elsewhere and bring it into English
so we can
enjoy it.
So is that one of the things that we can expect that's new from the Speculative Literature Foundation in the next year? Or do you have other stuff that is new and exciting?
That's the only definite new thing. I think we'd like to bring back, there's two programs that we did before. We had a mentor program where we paired up a new pro writer with beginners, and sort of they would answer questions and sort of have a conversation with them over the course of a couple of months. And we did that twice, and that was pretty successful. And I think we're probably going to bring that back. We have a small press cooperative, which has quite a few members, but as of yet, the only thing that we've done for the members has been to occasionally have joint tables at World Fantasy, WorldCon, WISCON, because often those tables can be pretty expensive for a small press to buy on their own. And if we kind of pool our resources, then we can do more. So we'll do more of that. But, you know, I'd be interested to find out what else would be helpful to small press people. You know, maybe, you know, someone had recently suggested, you know, simple instructions for getting your books onto Kindle, for example. Like, and maybe that's something that, you know, one of our volunteers could write up and then, you know, have that there as a resource for editors, for writers.
That would be helpful for everybody.
Yeah.
Sometimes the publishers, they just throw it out there and it doesn't work.
Yeah, no, you know, we have on our website, when we first started up, we did a lot of kind of resource lists, and I, you know, those are still there. Things like, you know, here's a basic guide to layout. Here's a basic guide to, you know, how to publish your book, et cetera, which I wish more people would read them. And then we would have more readable self-published books.
Cool. So, since you're interested in reaching out to the community, what are some ways that people can get in contact with you or anyone else who's working with you to either give ideas or to maybe take part in working with the foundation?
We'd love to have, I mean, we'd love to have volunteers. We're always happy to take donations. We're a 501c3, so donations are tax deductible, and you can even apply for your workplace to match the funds. We've gotten some great donations that way. But mostly at this point, what we need are more volunteers. And what they would do is just send me a note. It's director at speculativeliterature.org. I know that's long, sorry. And either I or my associate director, Corey Ralston, who has been fabulous, will get in touch. And I think we're actually planning a conference call, possibly a Skype conference call, sometime in the next few weeks to set up our plans for 2011 and figure out where we go from here.
Fantastic. So anybody wanting to go to the website and take part in all of the, the various things, there are a lot of resources, which I noticed there's like a long list of resources for all sorts of, and they're even in different categories, like for academics and so on. All that is at speculativeliterature.org, which is really easy to remember. We'll make sure there's links up too. Is there anything else you want to let us know about the foundation?
Not off the top of my head, I think. I think it's speclit.org will also get you there.
Really? Okay.
I think so. I won't swear to it. I should go try that. But I think that's how we set it up initially. So, I think that's it. And I will be – I'm also happy to talk to people when I'm at cons. I'm at WISCON every year, and I'm not sure where else I'll make it. I live in the Chicago area, so I might be at Capricorn or WindyCon. So.
Oh, fantastic. Well, hopefully some folks will see you there. So thank you very much for coming onto the show with us.
Thanks so much, guys.
And we will be right back with Reading and Writing. And we're back with our reading and writing section. So big things first, what are you reading, Jen?
I actually am reading Walking the Tree, and I just completed the entire Moorhawk trilogy by Celine Kiernan, and I absolutely loved it. And now I can definitively say everybody should go read it.
Awesome, awesome.
Yes.
All right, well, I'm reading Walking the Tree as well. This is by Karen Warren. I'm also going to try to finish The Winds of Gath by E.C. Tubb again. Hmm. Which is totally old school, ridiculous sci-fi. And a lot of stuff I put on here from blogs that I just don't want to read online. I'm reading a lot of that and reading interesting posts and things. So, yeah, on reading for school, which is always fun.
Not really.
No, and mostly writing at this point, trying to finish a couple short stories that I haven't been able to finish. So,
did you finish your thesis?
It's written. I haven't edited it.
Very exciting.
I know. It's going to be crazy.
All right. So this week, instead of having a question of the week at the end of our episodes from now on, we are changing our format. And on Mondays, I believe. Yes, Mondays.
Yeah, we're going to post them on Mondays.
On Mondays, we will be releasing a post that will have a question of the week and both of our responses. This will be a written post, not a recorded post.
Right. And we're going to do that from now on. For all of them, they're going to come up right after the episode. They may or may not be related to the episode, but point is we're going to actually throw out our thoughts on it, and we want you to join in the discussion.
Indeed, we do. Yeah. We always do.
So
please.
So yeah, so look forward to that on the day after this goes up. You'll have a post about it, and you can join in.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so that about does it for our show this week.
Yeah. We're going to tell them how to contact us.
Oh yeah, so email
skippyandfanty@gmail.com,
our blog,
wordpress.com/skippyandfanty.
Oh, it's Skippy.
No, skippyandfanty.wordpress.com,
or our Twitter,
twitter.com/skippyandfanty.
All right, so
you'd think after so many weeks of doing this I would have remembered by now, but no,
we've learned already that you're not professional.
Exactly.
All right.
Have a great week, everybody.
Bye. Our new intro music is Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
You're just another weak human afraid to face death.
Fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you, always.
End of line.